Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock. Tonight, we're talking Westmeath and Wexford Brilliance with two very happy managers in a few minutes' time. Tony O'Donoghue and Owen Heary on the madness ongoing in Sligo at the moment. Conor Mortimer is with me on studio for all things GAA, and Darren O'Neill as well after the European Games in Baku came to a close at the weekend. Text us in 51552 at Game On 2FM on Twitter, and anything you'd like to ask the lads between now and 8 o'clock, we'd be happy to put it to them. Conor, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Interesting weekend in the Football Championship. Lots and lots to talk about.
Yeah, it was, I think, you know, the Dublin game wasn't too much of a surprise, really. I don't think.
Kildare, know. I mean, everybody said they wouldn't be able to do what they went out to do and survive. That proved to be the case. And now there's a lot of post-mortem about what Jason Ryan was actually trying to do with that team.
I don't think Kildare played particularly badly, to be honest.
So it was more Dublin were too good?
Yeah, I think, you know, all year it's been, you know, the teams that Dublin play against, as in, you know, what they're doing, or they need to set up this way or that way. I mean, it's all well and good setting up whatever way you're going to do it, but I mean, the way Dublin played yesterday, start to finish, I've probably been harping on about it for the last year and a half, the likes of Connolly and stuff like that. I mean, when they hit form, you know, it doesn't really matter what you do. Kildare didn't stand a chance when the goals killed them. I mean, Dublin didn't score a huge amount of points yesterday.
But they went for the juggler.
They went for the juggler and got their goals. Yeah. And I mean, the finishes for the goals were, you know, Dublin can get five goals a game if they, because that's the amount of chances they have for goals. Now, they do miss a couple, obviously, but, you know, I think, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult to stop them again this year.
Defensively, have they improved enough? This was the big question mark over what Jim Gavin was doing in the off-season and even through the league as well. I suppose we don't know yet, do we?
Yeah, the question is, have they been challenged? I think the way they're set up now this year is a little bit different. I think Johnny Cooper tends to hang back all the time. Philly McMahon tends to go forward. And obviously Rory O'Carroll stays put as well. So I think that, you know, as opposed to last year, maybe the year before, you'd have Johnny Cooper bombing on. Philly Mac tends to bomb on anyway. But now they're leaving two at the back at all times, as opposed to leaving anyone exposed. But, you know, that, as you said, they haven't really been tested enough. I think the way the game is, you know, it's a defender's game now. You can literally play a poor corner back and he won't get destroyed because there's so many defenders that are back there now. I mean, even
so, they're not getting exposed because they've got so much help.
No, it's any defender. You see it on some teams there.
For someone like you, then, that would have been a bit of a nightmare because you obviously would have had a lot of pace and fancied yourself one-on-one against most guys. But if there's no space out there and there's too many players back...
Yeah, well, I think you've seen it there, which, you know... Young Bradley against Derry in the Donegal game on Saturday. I mean, he was playing midfield, centre forward for most of the game. Jamie Clark did it against Donegal as well, playing out the field. It's not an inside forwards game now. If you're playing against a packed defence like that, you need to have the licence from the manager to roam and go out the field and literally get on ball yourself, as opposed to being stuck in one corner trying to manoeuvre over and back. I mean, Dublin yesterday, they had... Connolly was in and out, Bernard Brogan was in and out. When Alan Brogan came on, he was roaming around the half-forward line, full-forward line as well. They have license to do that, to do whatever it takes to obviously win the game. And they all know their roles within the team as well. It's fairly evident by watching yesterday as well.
We're going to come back to Gaelic football in a few minutes' time, as I mentioned, and specifically Westmeath's incredible comeback win against Meath and Wexford. Took a lot of people by surprise. Division 4 team now beating a Division 1 side in Down at Wexford Park on Saturday night. But I did mention Darren O'Neill is with me in studio. A tired Darren O'Neill, I imagine, after the journey back.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose we left the village last night at about 12:30 Azerbaijan time, which is 8:30 Irish time. But I mean, we're up since probably 5 or 6 o'clock Irish time yesterday, and we've been travelling right through, so absolutely shattered now. But I mean, look, we're home and we're glad to be home after a long month.
As an experience overall, we'll get into the fight later on, and I suppose how the tournament went for you specifically, but as an experience with the team that you went to the place that you went back to, how did you find the whole thing?
I have to say it was one of the best trips I've ever been on with a boxing team.
Really?
And yeah, we had a meeting the last night, you know, just kind of I suppose we always do. We have our own little team meetings, and obviously the coaches give their feedback to the boxers, and you know, just congratulate the boys on their performances. But I suppose when it came to me, I had to honestly say that, you know, travelling away over 10 years now, it is probably one of the most enjoyable trips I've been on. We just got on so well from start to finish. All the boxers and coaches, the setup was phenomenal. You know, I suppose we weren't expecting it to be as good as it was. Everything was really, really comfortable from what we're used to.
You know,
it's great then when you get to interact with other sports that were there. So we totally enjoyed ourselves from start to finish.
Okay, well, as I said, we're going to go into the European Games and specifically the boxing a little bit later on with Darren. Connor's going to stay with us as well. But if you missed anything from the weekend, the Dubs were pretty awesome. Wexford, well, the same really, and that incredible comeback. Add that to two gold medals and everything else besides, and you get something that sounds a little bit like this.
It's Wexford who are going forward. Have we a goal here? The shot is blocked by the down goalkeeper, Stephen Kane, but it doesn't matter because the full-time whistle is gone here in any place. Wexford Park. All the young supporters run onto the pitch because Wexford have beaten down.
Derry put us under savage pressure, you know, so it was a wild, intense game. You know, when you're under that kind of pressure, you have to kind of try and rely on making the good decisions, but it doesn't always happen to get, you know. Listen, just relieved to get through by 2 points, you know, because it was just on the balance the whole way through there, you know.
Have you seen a better Westmeath performance than this they've given in the second half? John Heslin now has a support player, may not need him, goes for it, he scored! A goal by John Heslin to go with the 9 points he's already scored.
Will they be in for another goal? They are in for another goal, and it's into the back of the net. And it's Dean Rock of Dublin applying the finish, their third goal. They've been out of sight for quite a while.
Oh, we're getting the gold medal here, qualifies me for the World Championships in October. And when I go there, then if I do well there, it gives me a chance to qualify for the Olympic Games in Rio. That'll be dream come true.
Felt a bit tired today after, I think, yesterday's bout, but I managed to pull through, and I had to be very clever in there today. She's a very tricky opponent, and, you know, I think I won every round in there today, so I'm just delighted.
One furlong left to race. Jack Hobbs has gone to the front. Storm the Stars is second. Giovanni Canaletto is third. That's the way they're going to pass the judge with less than 150 to run. And it's Jack Hobbs second twice to his stable companion, Golden Horde. Gets his day in the sun at the Curra. It's Jack Hobbs who wins the 150th Derby.
Yeah, Jack Hobbs there winning the Derby at the Curra. JJ put that together, great stuff, and all the GA action and boxing as well besides. But we're going to talk to Westmead manager Tom Cribben now, who's on the line after that incredible win yesterday in the Leinster Championship. Tom, you're very welcome first of all.
Thank you.
Listen, you must have been a happy man waking up this morning after what happened yesterday. Incredible scenes at the final whistle, the emotion from the players, from yourself, quite something to watch really.
Yeah, look, it meant an awful lot to the players. There was a lot of history there to bury yesterday, and you know, I suppose any day in Croke Park to get a win is a super achievement and a great day out.
Give us an idea of what you were thinking as the first half began to unfold the way it did.
I was all over the place. You know, with a few lads kind of maybe, I don't know, shell shocked or not. It just seemed to couldn't catch their breath out there. Hmm. And they just came and played with unbelievable passion. And the probably, I don't know, the taste abroad to the game early on, and just, I don't know, whatever happened with us, we just didn't perform early, and we couldn't wait to get in at half time to regroup and reshape our team, and they had their homework done very well, and probably we weren't expecting them to give us that kind of respect, and maybe we expected them to line out a lot different, and they caught us on the run a bit, and so hopefully, and it did work out, we got in at half time and got regrouped, and the players went out and really done well in the second half.
Because I was really interested in your kind of thought process as that was unfolding. Obviously Meath were so comfortable, as you've just said, and it just seemed like exactly that. Your guys just couldn't get their routine, couldn't settle down into the game. So I'm wondering, you obviously spotted a few things that you felt you could turn the game around, but you had to wait for that half-time whistle, I suppose.
Yeah, look, it's very difficult. I was trying to get my runner to go out very regularly to give messages, and the linesman was giving him fierce grief and saying, look, you can't be going out. You have to go out only when the ball goes dead behind the gun, you know. And it was just very hard to get the messages out to different players because we were in trouble in a few different positions, and not basically due to the players playing poorly, but due to probably the game plan that we had set up to try and counteract. They threw you know, a different one at us, and to try and change our whole team then and get the shape right and that, it's very difficult to do that without sitting them all down and talking them through it and making sure they all know their new roles and the way that we're going to go with this. So the second half, that's what we did. We actually just concentrated on ourselves, the way we wanted to play, the way we were going to deliver, and you know, thankfully it worked out really well for us.
So, you know, Tom, from a manager's point of view, to change things around as you did, moving players in positions that they would have been more comfortable in, as you saw it, that they would have been better able to use whatever skills they had, and then for the team to go out and play like they did in the second half and react to whatever changes you made, that must be so satisfying from your point of view.
Yeah, well, they have a lot of character that proved that in their previous league matches. You know, they finished very strong in their championship matches, to prove that against Louth and against Wexford, you know, and the same again yesterday. They finished the second half very well. In the Wexford game, they scored 1-9 in 7 to 8 minutes. In the Louth match, I think we got 3 goals in a very short period. So they knew that we can score goals. They also knew that they can knock up a lot of scores in a short period of time. So even though we were, you know, a good bit behind, they still had the confidence in themselves that they could do it. And when I kind of was after discussing with my selectors what we needed to change and went back into the dressing room, you know, the senior players and even the young guys were talking, and they were saying all the right things, what they wanted to try and achieve in the second half. So it made my job very easy. I had to say very little to them, just talk them through the game plan, get them to focus on that, and just go out and deliver it in the second half, because they had set their standards of what they wanted to deliver in the second half themselves.
Connor, you wanted to come in. Connor Mortimer's with me in studio as well, Tom. You wanted to come in, Connor.
Tom, congrats on yesterday. Great win for you for a start.
Cheers, Connor. Thanks, Connor.
For me, I think when you came out in the second half, I think that, you know, I don't think Meade gave enough respect to Heston in particular. Now, obviously, I don't know. He was obviously coming in and out from full forward, out to the half forward line a bit in the second half. And a lot of that time he was on his own. Obviously, he was kicking scores for fun as well. You know, I think that was probably one of their downfalls. I mean, Heston has been probably known. Obviously, it's a team thing, and there's 15 of them on the field. But I mean, if you don't take out one of your most accurate players, you're going to be in trouble. And obviously, they fell by the sword at the end of the game.
Yeah, you might say that, but then again, you could say that. You know, Mick O'Dowd, to be fair to him, got 3 new players. John Heston, instead of playing in the whole time on the full forward position, moved in and out. John Kinnellan went on and done very, very well. Kieran Martin moved up front and scored 2-3 from play. Mm. So, like, it wasn't just one player. It was 3 players that played exceptionally well. Dennis Lennon came on then and mightn't have scored, but he caused havoc running at them and caused an awful lot of problems. The 2 guys in midfield and a half-back line just started attacking at them, and everybody seemed to come to life at the same time and get belief and start driving at them. So there was a combination of an awful lot of players starting to play really well at the one time. And, you know, like, you get your little bit of luck too. Like, they were coming out with the ball when I think the game was very close to a draw, or maybe we'd just gone a pint up, and one of their lads just cramped completely, and the ball dropped when he cramped, and he couldn't even move it a few inches to get his hand to it to knock it away, and we were straight in for an easy score. And, you know, like, you can't legislate for that, you know.
You'll obviously be thinking of changing Martin from centre-back to full forward next time, will you?
Ah, look, Kieran played exceptionally well yesterday, but you're like, the goal he got in the first half, he scored it from centre-half back, you know. He done the exact same. Like, if you go back to the Wexford game, Kieran scored a super goal from centre half back, and within 2 minutes of him getting that goal, he made a super block down the other end of the pitch to stop a certain goal. So, like, you know, you'd love to have three or four of Kieran Martins on your team, you know?
Was I mean, you said you knew in the back of your head, Tom, that you could back your players' physical conditioning and their fitness to come through in that second half. What specifically have you been focused on over the last, you know, I suppose the last few months, really, that you were as confident as you were that your fitness actually would pay dividends towards the later stages of the game?
Well, you know, we have a very confident physical trainer, John Dorn, and I knew that, you know, that's his job completely, to have the team ready and to last 70 minutes. And, you know, he delivered on that big time. And, you know, with a lot of good people in the backroom team working on various areas, and our nutrition guy, Barry Murray, is top-notch. You know, we've a top-notch endurance athlete in Jerry Duffy there giving advice as well. And we've Adrian Harrison doing his job, you know, coaching and that as well. So we knew with our backroom team that we were top-notch and that we were going to be really, really well prepared.
What about Dublin?
Look, Dublin at the start of the year, I thought were 10 or 12 points better than any team in Leinster, and they're proving a bit more at the moment. And so, look, we'll work hard for the next 2 weeks, try and see if we can devise some kind of game plan to be able to be competitive with them and score enough to maybe, you know, see can we deliver a performance. That's all you could really say at the moment. You know,
Can I ask just before you go, Tom, what did you make of Wexford's win against Down, given you had beaten them in the last round? What did you think of that?
Within 10 minutes to go, Wexford were 2 points up on us. We got a goal, went a point up, and Kieran Martin made an unbelievable block. Wexford were very unlucky not to beat us, so I knew Wexford were very, very close to it. And they had a lot of very mobile, fast players on the pitch. They had done a huge amount of homework on us, which caused us all the problems. So I wasn't surprised that they delivered. A new manager, David Power, in his first year. So, like, I'm not surprised during the league campaign he found it tough, because he was probably looking at a lot of new players, trying to learn about his team. And, I was delighted to see him doing so well too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you on such a brilliant day for Westmead football. Tom, best of luck with the season to come, whatever that may hold. And I tell you what, we're all fascinated to see how Westmead are going to take on Dublin. Thanks so much again for coming on.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks very much. Thanks to me. And let's go straight on, because we do have Wexford manager David Power on the line as well. Hi, David.
Right, Hugh, how's things?
Not too bad. I tell you, no, it's a feel-good story, one after the other here. And, you know, I just had to ask Tom what his thoughts were on your guys' win against Down on Saturday night. Just an incredible win, really, David, first of all. How do you feel? You know, a couple of days to kind of reflect on it now.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the players in what they did. I thought against Westmead, and actually Tom covered it there, like the goal was really the game changer, I suppose, on that. So we're very, very close to Westmead, and I always felt that once we got a performance against Down that we could really, really we could beat them. And because I knew we had plenty of pace in our team, and Down, you know, they seem to be struggling with teams when they're actually running, when forwards are actually running, they're actually running at them. So I always felt that we had a big chance against them. And you know, when your forwards like Ben Brosnan, Kieran Ling, and also then young talents like Nevin Rossiter and Tiernan Rossiter, you always have a chance in the game.
You have spoken about getting these guys to believe in themselves and their own ability over the last while. Was that a difficult thing to do, David?
It is, because I suppose Wexford have been used of, I suppose, losing tight games, and people say, like, the last 10 minutes even against Westmead there was fitness issues, and it's not. It's all down to the mental, I suppose, attitude of the players, and and that was the big thing, because I knew after the Wednesday night against Westmead that we had a chance against Down, because there was a full crowd there again, and they were really, really I suppose, ready to go. Because Down were after coming off as defeat as well. So, like, both teams were kind of equal, I suppose, on that front. So we're very, very happy.
I mean, you nearly need to have a psychology degree as well sometimes when you're taking over, you know, teams that, as you said, are low on confidence. That so, like, between yourself and Matty and the rest of the coaching staff, how did you go about kind of raising that self-belief to convince the players? Because it's one thing, I suppose, telling lads that, you know, they can go on and do it, they can win these type of games. It's another thing to actually get them to believe that.
Yeah, I suppose really, like, we used 36 players in the league, and there was different times and different games that we played really, really good football, and it was all about actually putting us kind of dust together in one game. Against Tipperary, actually, the last league game, we had a very, very good second half. And then against Westmeath, then we were able to perform for about 60 minutes. And I suppose for the last 2 weeks leading into the Down game, we were just saying, if we can perform for 70 minutes, that we're going to have a serious, serious chance of winning. So, and we're showing them the video analysis, we're showing them the stats, we're showing them the graphs where they were improving on. And it was there in front of them. It was just they had to actually go out and do it. And that was the big thing that I said to them at half time. We were in, I suppose, a leading, we were leading by a couple of points at half time. And I just said, are we afraid to actually win this game? Don't go out and actually win the second half. Don't be afraid to win this game. And it's about self-belief, and it's about self-confidence. And and to be fair to the players, they were just simply outstanding. And look, and I'm delighted for them, because they're after getting a lot of criticism, I suppose, because we're down in Division 4 next year. Mm. They put in massive, massive work this year. And now, look, they got a win, and which is great.
I clicked on a video of Graham Loy's hit on, I think, Conor Laverty. It seemed to sum up the passion that the players approached the game with. And I was thinking, for Graham specifically, after all the battles he's had with injury and you know, really bad luck over the last while, it was brilliant to see him, of all people, take that game by the scruff of the neck.
Like, Graham played not one single minute of the league. He only came on in the last 10 minutes against Westmeath. And so we kind of decided to look, we had nothing to lose really, and I was astonished that he lasted so well for the whole 70 minutes. Like, that shoulder that was on, that happened in the last 2 minutes of the game. Mm. So that tells you how, like, but he's a model player. He looks after himself, like he really looks after himself so well. And and to be honest, I just, from the young players, to see him back playing was huge as well, and that was really, really good.
Conor, you wanted to come in?
Well, he uses our gym over in Parnell's there, Davis, so we can take a bit of credit for that hit.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, Conor, yeah.
Just another one, David, there on the draw. It's been kind to you in a home draw, but I think it'll probably be another Ulster team for you anyway, in Derry.
It's going to be actually a long journey. We're going off to Derry. So, the big thing is, like, Derry bet down by a point. So that's confidence, I suppose, kind of straight away. Mm. Derry now are after losing their game there last weekend, and we were after winning. So that's a positive, I suppose, as well. So, you know, like, Derry have some very, very good players. They've Mark Lynch, Owen Bradley, you know. So, like, we've got nothing to fear either. Yes, it's going to be a long journey. But, you know, look, I suppose Longford bet Derry there last year as well. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing for us, because Derry are probably going to be saying that to themselves. So, look, I suppose the next 2 weeks, I suppose, Hugh, it's really all about us as well, just making sure that we're going to perform again.
And in terms of, look, I'm not asking you to divulge tactics on national radio, obviously, but, you know, we know how Derry set up. We saw them take on Donegal pretty much at their own game, and they only just came up short at that. You know, you wouldn't have to be a genius to suggest that they might do something similar against you guys. And the style of play that Wexford played, particularly on Saturday night, was very much anti that kind of football. So that'll be very interesting from your and the lads' point of view and the coaching setup yourself and Matty to try and plot your way through this game.
Exactly. I think the big secret to it is we have to be moving the ball fast. Move the ball fast, wide, and I suppose, and a good kicking game in. Then into the full forward line. Like, if you're moving the ball fast, it's very hard for the other team to get their defence set up. So it's about when we get the ball, I suppose, back, once our defenders get the ball back, that we're moving the ball quick. And I think if we do that, and also I think the big thing is, you probably know you're going to get frees against Ulster teams as well. And the big thing is, we need to be converting all our score but frees as well if we're going to win. So, you know, with all those little things, you know, they're all going to add up, I suppose, on the day. So it's about, you know, again, I think it's going to be about us performing, and then look, and then if we want to be good enough, great. But, you know, like, we're going to keep playing our style of football that I believe in. That's the way I did it in Tipperary as well. I'm not going to change that, you know. But, you know, I think, look, the players even, they're very, very self-confident now after, I think, after Saturday night. So, look, we're going off to Derry. I believe that we can actually win.
Well, I can tell you something, that we had Billy Walsh on the day after the hurlers were given that lesson by the Cats, and he was inconsolable. Darren O'Neill's in studio here, and he just said he was obviously given something to shout about with you lads, the footballers, carrying the Wexford flag. It was a fantastic win, and we wish you all the best against Derry. David, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks very much, Hugh. Thank you.
Super stuff. David Power there. Yeah, your boys gave the lads a right old trouncing there.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure you rubbed that in with Billy, did you?
I didn't too much, because I was fighting that day, so I wanted him on my side.
Right, that's fair enough.
Yeah, it was bittersweet for him. Look, I suppose Kilkenny are always going to be a hard team to beat, you know.
They seem to, this factory, Steve. I was messing with the lads.
I get annoyed people saying that we're weakened. Yeah, I know we've lost a lot of players. Off the panel, you have to remember, there's only one player missing from the starting team that won the All-Ireland last year in the replay. JJ Delaney. But look, Leinster final is going to be very, very interesting. Galway, what a performance from them the week before, you know.
Yeah, they've been brilliant. They hammered Dublin, and then Laois, who a lot of people thought would put it up to them in certain areas, absolutely dismantled them.
Yeah, but I suppose it's no real big surprise, you know. But fair play, Leach are coming on again, and it's good to see them back into the mix again. But the Leinster final is going to be a tricky one now. You know, Canning's been in form recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a new fullback there now. See how he's going to hold up after playing a Stormer last day. Unfortunately, he didn't get to see it, but I'll definitely be watching for the Leinster final.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Okay, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. Before we do, I want to ask you about what happened on social media circles last night and after the game. And Conal Rourke has spoken on Radio 1 earlier today that he actually was also kind of dragged into this by lads abusing him on Twitter. This is something you've dealt with a little bit in your time as a player. What's your thought on it?
I probably bought a bit of it on myself, I think, really. I think when you have access to sites like that, and, you know, you could be out some night or whatever and say whatever, just at someone or whatever, you don't really think about it till you wake up the next morning and you're in data with abuse or whatever. You know, I thought it was pretty unfair, to be honest, Sean, on the goalkeeper, you know, for making a big tackle. I mean, I'm sure my life had worse, and I'm sure Darren has had a lot worse happen over the years, bar being in a boxing ring or bloody playing sports at any level.
This is a text in from Jaron Cork. Lads, I think the social media attack on the meat keeper is wrong. Both the GA should give him the longest suspension available to them. What a cowardly challenge, Jaron Cork. I didn't see it at all like that. What was your thoughts on this?
Well, I didn't either. I said it yesterday. I thought it was a frontal charge. You know, I was only saying it to Aaron there beforehand. When you're frontal charging someone hard, to get the most power into it, your arm will come up. You know, I didn't think it was an elbow for a start. And particularly your man had his arms out. It was into his chest. So it obviously looked a lot worse than it was as well. I mean, if that was shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
Paddy's a big man as well.
Sorry, yeah.
You know, Paddy's a very big man as
well. Yeah, he's 6 foot six or thereabouts.
He's huge, you know. I don't think, I obviously missed the match, but I did look at the challenge itself, and I mean, it was a split second after he gave away the ball.
Yeah,
you know, what can you expect?
He was coming out with the ball. I think this is the crucial thing. He was coming out with the ball, and the challenge was literally half a second before he gave the ball away. So they're on a collision course. He's not going to back out.
He's not a ballerina or anything. Like, I mean, he's
exactly.
A big man, you know, and he's coming out, getting rid of the ball. I suppose, As a successful defender should do, or a goalkeeper should do, I didn't see anything wrong with the tackle at all. I wouldn't have even given a yellow card, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but these lads are real brave, aren't they? Be sitting behind their phones or their computers or whatever, like, throwing crap like that out when nobody can see them and no one can hold them account.
It's not good.
They wouldn't do it in front of his face, I tell you what, because he'd be sent into next year.
But he did the very right thing, you know. I thought he might put out an apology or something, but he just retweeted it and it's, I suppose, visible for everyone. Yeah. And I suppose people can now see what sports GA players and other
have to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it's an amateur game at the end of the day for him, you know, and he's there and he's doing his best as everyone else is, but to be getting that agreement.
These Mobuses who wouldn't lace his boots.
Exactly.
Cracking game yesterday between Meath and Westmeath. Didn't give Westmeath a chance at halftime, but what a recovery. Some fantastic goals scored by both teams. It'll be interesting to see how they fare against the Dubs as Larry in Dublin. And what a first game in Croker. The way football should be played, Paul and Sligo. Yep, completely agree.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Now, you're very welcome back. The situation in Sligo Rovers Football Club seems to be going from bad to worse, not just in terms of what's happening on the pitch, but in relation to the way the departure of Owen Heary as manager has been handled by the club. I'm joined on the line by our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue. Hi, Tony.
How are you doing, Hugh?
Pretty good, thanks. And also by Owen Heary himself. It's great to have you on, Owen. Thanks a million.
Thanks very much.
Listen, Tony, can we just take you back to Saturday? Because you were at the Carlisle Grounds for the match against Bray and Sligo Rovers, and you got a statement that was further to one that was released on Friday. Can you just explain what happened?
Yeah, well, it was about 5:30 on Saturday. The game was a 5:45 kickoff, and it was an additional statement from Sligo Rovers, because on Friday, Owen and myself, actually, we were at Inchicore for the game between St. Pat's and Longford Town. Owen was working for Setanta Television, and he wasn't aware of a statement that had been released just before kickoff there, which said that he had stepped down as manager of Sligo Rovers. The additional statement that was given to me the following day said that Sligo Rovers concluded an agreement with Owen's legal representatives earlier in the week. It said that football is a results-driven business and the resources provided by the loyal supporters of Sligo Rovers were not reflected in the on-field performances and results this season. The club's league position and falling gate receipts made the incontrovertible case for change. Then it went on to say Owen is a young manager and the club wishes him well in his career. Joseph Ndoh and Gavin Dykes continued to take the team. They lost, of course, to Bray Wanderers, and they flipped positions, if you like. It means that Sligo Rovers have dipped into the relegation positions. They're second from bottom now, and you know, for a club that won the League of Ireland only in 2012, FAI Cup champions 2010, 2011, 2013, Setanta Cup winners in 2014, you know, this is a club that expected to be, you know, definitely in the top three, top four, definitely to be challenging for Europe. Owen had come down to Sligo, had immersed himself in the whole Sligo culture, if you like, because this was an opportunity for him to, you know, he's a young manager and he's got a great career behind him, and everyone felt that he had a great chance of making it in team management. After his time at Bohemians, Sligo seemed like a big step up, because they are a big club, there's no question about that in an Irish context. But now for them to be slipping into the relegation positions, it's not good. It's not good for Sligo and it's not good for the league. It's not good for football. So yeah, it's been a mess really, the way it's been handled. I'm sure Owen can speak for himself and say where he stands with things at the moment, but yeah, it hasn't been handled well, that's for sure.
Okay, so I suppose the first question, Owen, is has an agreement been reached with a legal representative who was acting on your behalf between yourself and Sligo Football Club?
Yeah, everything I saw, as I said, the issue wasn't about what was happening. The issue was the statement that came out on Friday.
Mm.
That was they had it I stepped down. I only seen that statement literally before, you know, going on live on air. I only seen the statement and it was untrue. You know, the thing was that the club let me go. I didn't step down from it. And that was the issue that I had with the club. And they released a statement without talking to me, without saying anything. I didn't even know there was another statement released on Saturday. The phone says I've been saying it there. So, you know, the communication is the big part of it.
We have asked Joe Burns to come on, by the way. He's chairman of Sligo Rovers and he's just unavailable tonight because of travel commitments, but he has said he will take a call later on in the week. So where do you stand now, Owen? So where is the situation now?
Well, it's all done and dusted now, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I've said my piece, I didn't step down. I've no issue with the club, I've no issue with Joe. I'd speak to Joe, I spoke to him on Sunday.
Hmm.
As I said, it's not a major issue. It's just to let people know that I didn't walk away from something.
How do you feel, you know, after everything that's happened?
Oh, I'm grand. I am absolutely grand. You know, you move on. This is football. It's a football-related business. These things happen. I've seen it. I've been involved in this league for 20-odd years, 23 years. So I've seen these things happen before. I've seen how they play out. And it's just important that, you know, I step away and someone else come in to give Joseph and Dowd their backing, you know, and hopefully get behind them and, you know, start winning games. That's the main thing for Sligo, is to win games and move on.
But I imagine when you first went down to Sligo and you took the job on, and as Tony said, you immersed yourself in Sligo itself, that you would have envisaged a lot longer in charge of the team than actually what transpired. So
yeah, of course. I mean, you know, when I looked at it last season, they lost 14 league games and the budget was cut by 30%. I brought in players and I honestly thought at the club that we progress and we move the table. There is a lot of problems down the slide. There is a lot of issues, you know, but as I said, it's not for me to say. It's for the club to sort out themselves. And, you know, as I said, I've moved on now and I'm sure the club have moved on. Point someone's down and hopefully get results and move up the table.
Personnel issues, do you think?
Sorry?
Personnel issues with players that are at the club?
No. I'm not slagging any players. I'm not getting into that. As I said, it's not my department now. It's moved on. It's other people's department. So it's up to them to go and rectify the problems that they have or the issues that the club have, and hopefully you'll progress. And just it's basically just to go out and try to win games. There's two big games coming up against Galway and Longford, so they're winnable for them. You know, and I think if the team have the right attitude, they'll go out and win them games.
Do you think you got the support of the players?
You're going to keep asking me that question.
It's
about being professional. Players just have to be professional. And it's not professional for me, it's being professional for themselves. I said, I've had a good playing career. So if these players want to progress and have good playing careers, they just have to be professional in themselves, you know, and move on and try to win games. If they're not professional going into games, if they're not prepared really going into games, then you won't win games. So I said, the players, there is some good young players down there. There's some talented young players. David Cotley comes to mind. I mean, you know, he's captain of the club now. He's going to be a leader in years to come, and he's a ray of talent. Richard Brush, another one who's a good professional. And they'll help the younger players and develop them and help them get through.
Because, look, the reason why I say that is, you know, Alan Colley's a big part of this show, and he's pretty close to Sligo, and he was questioning whether you had been given a fair go by the lads on the pitch, and whether they had actually done everything that they could to ensure that whatever you were trying to do with the club was actually carried through to the performances.
Yeah, but I'm not going to question players. I think I played with some great players, with players that had a right attitude and things like that, and you see why they were always at the top. So it's up for players to come with the right attitude and do the right things. We can only do so much as coaches, and I'm not pushing the blame onto anyone, but as a manager, as a coach, you go out and analyse the team you're playing. You go out and give your team all the chance of winning, you know, how to play, how not to play, how to beat teams, how to try to get something from teams. But if you don't have the right application going in, then you get turned over. And look, we all make mistakes. Sometimes you don't play well, sometimes you do play well and don't get the results you deserve. I mean, there is, we've been unlucky a lot of the games against Limerick, 94-minute penalty miss against Derry. So there was an awful lot of unluck, I suppose, a bit of a little bit unlucky along the way. Hmm. We had players that got injured at important times, and just didn't seem to have it every week, but there was something coming along, you know. So it's just, that's just football, that's the way it goes. It didn't work out for me at Sligo. That's grand. I'll move on and someone else will come in and hopefully do a better job and push the team up the table.
Tony, I suppose on the basis of what we've seen over the last few games, I mean, look, you mentioned the loss of the Carlisle grounds there. Sligo's still very much in trouble, so it doesn't seem like a magic wand has been waved over the last little while since Owen has left.
You know, I had to go and get a post-match interview on Saturday after the game, and, you know, half an hour after the final whistle, and Joseph Ndo and Gavin Dykes were still talking to the players inside the dressing room. Eventually, Gavin Dykes came out, and there was almost tears in his eyes, I have to say. I mean, these people bleed Sligo, you have to say. Oh, I believe Joey Ndo was on Ocean FM trying to kind of get the fans to rally around the club now as well, because it is a difficult time, and obviously, you know, the gates have slumped as well, so every club needs support in the bad times as well as in the good. It's going to be difficult, though. Joseph Ndo doesn't have the correct badges, so he can only stay in charge for 60 days, so somebody with the correct coaching qualifications will have to come in. I understand that there's not going to be a change immediately, but there'll be some consideration of various names, people who have the badges and who might help out Sligo Rovers. Sligo also have a kind of a history, if you like, of going further afield and looking for managers. Obviously, Paul Cook was successful for them and all his cup career. Ian Barraclough won the league with them, of course. Willie McStay, a former Sligo manager. Steve Cottrell, a former Sligo manager. Laurie Sanchez, a former Sligo manager. So they may trawl a bit wider than we normally see in the League of Ireland, although the likes of Mick Cook and Damien Richardson will be linked with it as well. But it's a difficult time for the club. They have, about 48 points to play for now. So it's a very, very serious second half of the season for them. And losing twice now now to Bray Wanderers, because it's those clubs in and around the end of it. That's why, as Owen just said there, the next two games, Sligo against Galway and then against Longford, are absolutely crucial. So if they go well, maybe they'll leave things as they are for the moment, but it is a mess, and I'm very sorry to see Owen out of the game for the moment as well. I think that's probably the first time in 23 years, Owen, is it, since you haven't been involved in football?
Yeah, first time we can have a break in 23 years, so...
Brilliant.
I'm looking forward to it. I can go and watch games now and enjoy them, and obviously analyse them for anyone that, you know. I mean, I've spoken to Joseph the other day, and as I told him that if he needs anything done, whether it's footage on teams or whether it's analysing teams for him, then there's no problem. It'll definitely help out. And I know you're saying that he might go further afield, but I don't think the club have the resources to go further afield. As I said, they've cut the budget. You know, they're looking to cut it, I think, again. So it is a difficult time in terms of bringing money in. So trying to go further afield to get the manager in, you know, and I believe that there's a couple of players maybe on the way out of there. I'm not 100% sure, but if that's the case, and it shows you that the money is not there, that what they have to do, and I think, is to give Joseph the reins, let him take it, come towards the end of the season, you can get someone in with a pro badge, come towards the end of it. But at the moment, I think Joseph's the right man to be there and to take it, with Gavin Dykes as well. Gavin Dykes has a lot of experience in the management side of it, so let the two of them, you know, have a go at it and try turn things around.
So no mad rush for you then, Owen, to get back into management? You're happy to take a bit of a break from
I'd love to get back in. As I said, I've learned a lot from the couple of months at Sligo. I've obviously analysed myself and self-assessment of myself and say, right, what do I need to improve on, and hopefully I can do that over the next couple of months as well and keep learning. But I'd love to get back into the game, but I mean, there's nothing there available at the moment, so I'll just, you know, keep trying to educate myself and go and watch games and analyse things and talk to people that are better managers than me. You know, as I said, Barry Clough has offered me to go over and have a look at things over there, so I might take that opportunity as well where I can.
Well, it's brilliant to talk to you, and just, I think we're all delighted that everything's been resolved as well, and yeah, thanks so much for making the time on, appreciate it.
No problem, thanks very much.
Super stuff. Owen here, there, and our own Tony O'Donoghue, soccer correspondent with RT. Okay, Darren O'Neill is with us in the studio, so is Connor. We're talking boxing and European games after the break.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
51552 for your texts. Connor and Darren are still with me. Now, you know, we got to go into the nitty gritty here, and I got to ask you how you felt after your... ultimately, a defeat which cost you an awful lot in terms of a medal, but more importantly, I suppose, for you continuing your training over the next year, it was a massive decision that went against you.
Yeah, I'm obviously still, I suppose, very gutted about it, you know. At the time, it was very raw, you know, and it was difficult because, you know, we had young Brendan Irvine boxing later that evening in the semi-final, so...
And you're a captain of the team.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it was difficult. I was the last one up. Katie and Michael had just got through, and I was in trying to get another one into the medals. And look, I knew it was going to be tough going into it, but, you know, the closer I got to the fight, the more confident I was. You know, I was thinking, geez, I ain't going to win this, like. And I got into the ring fully convinced I was going to win it. I felt I had a bad first round, but I was a little bit slow getting out of the box. I wanted to have a good start. But I was finding it a little bit difficult to get my timing and my distance with him, but I still felt I was landing the cleaner punches. But I would have been happy even to concede the first round, because he was kind of being more of a bully, if you want to say it like that. Second round, I thought I cleaned him. He didn't get shots off of me, simple as that. And I only got a 2-1, the Brazilian judge gave against me in the last round, same way. I just landed the cleaner shots. Your man, he hit me one shot, I think, on the shoulder or on the chest or something, that kind of knocked me backwards when I was off balance. And that's the only thing that budged me at all in the whole round.
He seemed out on his feet in the last round.
He didn't want to know about it. He was just holding on. You know, and I think the crowd told the story at the end, really. You know, obviously, when I look back at it, I still feel I won it. But the crowd booed. He looked surprised. Everyone looked surprised. But look, I suppose the hard part then was to try to deal with that or try to cover it up for the evening and get back in and I suppose have myself horse spending the night shouting for Brendan, you know.
How does it feel walking back to the dressing room knowing you should have won a fight that went against you? That actually, as I said, has huge implications for you for the next while.
Yeah, it was very, very difficult. Yeah, it's you're left kind of disillusioned, you know, because at the end of the day, you go in and do your best, and like, all I ever ask for is fair play, as simple as that. You know, if I get beaten, I'll hold my hands up and say I was beaten, you know, and that's all you can ask for.
It happens too much in boxing, yeah, Darren. It happens too much in boxing. It's
It's really getting bad, you know. At different stages, They changed the scoring system originally. It was actually Billy was telling me the other day after the Seoul Olympics back when he boxed, and I think you probably everyone remember Roy Jones Jr. got absolutely robbed over there. And they brought in the point systems then to try even things out, and you could see what judges were scoring. So you might have one judge completely off the scale, and you could pull him up over it. But they changed it back to try make it fair again. But I don't understand why they just brought it back to what it was. So now, I mean, you have two different judges looking at a fight. For example, if you have Mike Tyson judging a fight, and you have Muhammad Ali judging a fight, they're both looking for different things. So it's kind of hard to, you know, to be a little bit objective. And I think sometimes, well, obviously the international judges should know, but sometimes they're left thinking, what fight are these lads looking at?
This is the thing, and there's five judges basically around ringside, and only three of them are picked to actually score the fight. So only three of the scores count, if you like. Yeah. And I'm wondering, actually, if you had five out of five involved in the scoring and averaged it out, would you get fairer decisions? I don't know. It's hard to say, I suppose. But what do you think?
Possibly. It would be interesting to see what the other two judges had scored in my fight. I know one of my fights last year, the two judges that didn't score gave me all rounds, and I ended up losing the fight. Which doesn't make sense, you know. As I was saying to you before we came on, we had for four of our contests, we had a Chinese judge that was on the wrong side of our decision, so he gave the decision against us when others gave it to us.
Four decisions in a row, the judge gets it wrong.
Yeah, he just gave it against the Irish. So I mean, even Katie's fight, which was a draw against Alex Shevna, the girl, you remember her boxing in the world final in Korea when I was there. It was a draw at the end of the fight on the judges' scorecard. So the judges then had to decide to push the button who they felt won. Two of the judges gave to Katie, and the Chinese went against Katie. You know, so it's you're kind of left wondering, well, what the hell do we do here?
Yeah, and that's, you see, that must add to the frustration, and especially when everyone can see that it's blatantly obvious that the result has gone against you for the wrong reasons, that just compounds it.
Yeah, it was killer because, you know, obviously, as I said, yeah, sometimes your own teammates are going to obviously try lift your morale and say, oh, yeah, we thought you got it. And, you know, sometimes you can be a little bit biased. But when you listen to other people who are, who are removed from the situation or a little bit, or I suppose, less biased and more objective view, you know, and they're saying the same thing to you, it's very difficult. But look, I wasn't the only one. There's a few of us were very, very tight in decisions. Fantastic performance from the whole team. Every single
incredible performance from the team. Let's not just dumb it down here.
Medalists, you know, we had two boxers who were unfortunate not to win a fight, and both of them were beaten by the eventual gold medalist. So that just goes to show. I mean, I remember that team. We went away to Bulgaria earlier in the year, and to be fair, you know, we're a young team apart from myself and Adam Nolan. Mm. But the honesty of the boys earlier in the year, we had a meeting after the competition. Before we came home, and they said that they had doubted themselves because they were just stepping up to the senior stage, which takes a lot of honesty and bravery, you know, especially in a combat sport.
Of course.
And you know, I said to the boys, well, look, I felt a little bit the same because my first time up at a heavyweight division, but to see the performance they put in there, you know, I suppose they just epitomised what our high performance setup has been. You know, all we ever asked for is 100% honesty, and you know, in the ring they gave everything they could, and it was phenomenal.
To see someone like Brendan Irvin coming through, 19 years of age as well, you know, and what brilliant. He did. You look at Michael O'Reilly as well, who's come through to win. And then you take the guys that weren't even involved in this tournament, the likes of Mick and Paddy Barnes, you know, all the lads that are sitting at home on the sidelines watching. And you just think, how good is the Irish boxing team at the moment, all things being equal?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I was talking to some of the boys, as I say, I've been on the international scene for close to 10 years now. But I remember the first major I went to was 2006. There was Eric Donovan, Roy Sheen, Kennedy Egan and myself. That was all was deemed
that was
good
it.
Enough at the time to go. We could send three teams now, you know. We have depth of numbers, as we kind of say in the GAA world. But, you know, we are progressing all the time, and hopefully it'll continue to do so. But, you know, you'll have different tournaments where things don't go well, and, you know, you'll have different spells where teams that we had. Azerbaijan did well here, as did Russia. Ukraine were the kings of the last Olympics, you know, so it kind of goes in cycles, but hopefully ours will continue to grow.
You have a European Championships to train for?
Yeah, it's coming short, or it's coming very shortly. Yeah. We have this week off. We're back to train on the 7th. The three men who medalled have an extra week off because they don't have to go to European Championships. They're not allowed to go to European Championships.
So the European Championships for you is a gateway to the World Championships, obviously, and you're going to fight pretty much the same guys, more or less. that would have fought at the European Games. So, you know, you're thinking, hang on a sec, I can beat these guys and I can actually go and do really well here.
Yeah, well, I suppose, as I say, at the end of each summer we have a meeting and I said to the young guys, phenomenal performance. You just have to prove to yourself that you're as good as the best in the world. And I think something that I realised myself, I looked around and said, geez, you know, I'm up here with these heavyweights. Because a lot of people felt I was foolish moving up two weight divisions, said I wasn't going to be big enough, I'd be pushed around, I'd be destroyed, to be honest. But I suppose I had a bit of belief in myself, and you know, after that tournament now, I know that I have potential, but it's about putting the head back down now for the next 6 or 7 weeks and getting ready again.
You'll be flogged, I can tell you. Thanks so much for coming in. I know you're absolutely exhausted, but thanks for coming in. And we're going to keep an eye, obviously, the next few weeks to come back into us. Yeah. Connor as well, plenty to talk about this week, GA-wise. Thanks for all your texts, by the way, and thanks to John, who produced today. We're back tomorrow night. Louise McSherry's on the way. Stay tuned.